Fran fam, what's going on? Listen, before we start this podcast episode, I have a very, very small favor to ask of each and every single one of you guys. I appreciate the support that all of you have been showing for the podcast up until this point, but we want to try and get these episodes out to as many people as possible. And how we do that on the audio side is by leaving a review and dropping a 5-star rating. So if you've been a consistent listener of the pod, please, before we get this episode started, it only takes a couple of seconds, leave a review. It could be a 2-word, 3-word, 4-word review, or just leave a rating. Do something to get the word out so that we can get the Marvin Francois Show to more listeners moving forward. Outside of that, love you guys, appreciate the support, but without further ado, let's get into this episode.
Trump, one of the things that he did, obviously, he's, however you feel about him, his team knows a lot about taxes, right? And his ex-wife passed away. One of the things that he did was he buried his ex-wife on one of his golf courses. Why would he do that? Well, now that golf course becomes a cemetery for tax reporting purposes, and now there's no property tax on it, there's no sales tax, there's no income tax, and I think it's even unique to Jersey too, so it's about the location. So he did it at this location, and now that's a tax write-off.
Hey, business owners, what if I helped you get access to $50,000 in business funding for $1 a day? Would you be interested? Well, inside of my Credit Mastery community, you're going to be getting exclusive access to our in-depth training program that's worth tens of thousands of dollars to give you the exact strategies you need on how to restore your credit and on how to properly structure your business. You're also going to be getting access to a financial consultant with over a decade of experience in the funding space that'll help you reach your financial goals in half the time it would take if you were to do it on your own. And we're going to be giving you 2 coaching calls every week that'll give you the exact banks you need to go to get access to $50,000 to $100,000 in business funding. This is the same community that helped Pat get access to $50,000 in funding from Chase, helped Alvin get access to $8,000 in funding from Amex, helped Matt boost his personal credit score by 150 points, and helped Donna delete a bankruptcy from her credit report. So if you're interested, click the link above or below this video to join now, and we'll see you on the other side of success. Let's go, family.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Marvin Francois Show, your number one source for all things business, finance, and investing. And today, is a very special day because our guest today is a CPA, author, entrepreneur, mentor, and tax strategy specialist extraordinaire. He's the founder of the Valbrun Group, a 7-figure advisory firm that helps entrepreneurs legally and ethically save 5 to 7 figures in taxes while building the kind of wealth the IRS can't touch. Whether he's speaking on stage, teaching strategies on how to leverage the tax code for your benefit, or authoring award-winning books like Prolific Profit, teaching you how to maximize business profits and dominate the market, his mission remains the same: to empower our people with the secrets that the wealthy have known for decades. And today, he's here to do more of the same. Ladies and gentlemen, from South Florida, I'm here with the one, the only, my guy, Mr. Michelle Valbrun. What's going on, family? How are you?
What kind of, that's an amazing intro, brother. Man, I appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Most definitely, man. Excited to have a fellow Haitian brother here. I think we've had, obviously, with Herman, I've had Herman on, and maybe one or two that I'm not remembering. Me and you were joking off camera, even though we come from the same culture. This is not going to be a very Haitian-heavy pod, if you will.
Nah, yeah, saying it, bro.
Me, your Creole need some work, but we're going to work on it, man. We're going to get there. But how are you, brother? How's everything?
I'm amazing, man. I'm blessed. I'm happy to be here. You know, things are really growing with all the changes going on in the world and the economy and life's personal things and relationships are all good, man. Excited
to have you on, man. Obviously, you and I also talked about this off camera. This is definitely a long time coming. I've been following you for some time. You've been following me, and man, the impact that you've had in this space is one of one. And to be able to get the opportunity to sit down with you here and talk about something that I think our people there's still dots we're trying to connect.
For sure.
And individuals like you help us to do it in a way that's effective and efficient. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a great conversation, and I'm looking forward to it. Obviously, I know who you are. There may be some people who are watching that are not too familiar with you, so let's go ahead and get them familiar. Who exactly is Mr. Michelle Valbrun?
Yes, so Michelle Valbrun, originally from South Florida and of Haitian descent. My parents actually came from Haiti to give my sisters and I the opportunity to be able to live the American dream. And through that, we had some very interesting experiences. So, you know, I'm 7 years old, and I was waiting for my mom to come home one night. And I'm a mama's boy, by the way, right? So, you know, just pretty much whatever my mom tells me to do, I'm a mama's boy in that way. and super excited to see my mom. My mom's coming home late from work, and I start running to the door. I'm super excited to see her. And as she's opening up the door, I'm looking up at her, and I see, like, this look of shock on her face. I'm like, what in the world? Next thing I know, I look on the side of my mom's head, and I see a gun pointed at my mom's head, literally like just like this. Mm. And I see the man behind her. I've never seen this man before. And he says, "Diti gaso kushatea," which means tell the boy to get on the floor in Creole. Mm. Mom peeps back to me in English. She says, "Michelle." He says, "Get on the floor, Michelle." He says, "Get on the floor." I'm 7 years old. I'm on the balls of my feet. I'm shaking, right? On the balls of my feet. I lay down on the floor. More people start coming in with guns. And my sisters were in their room. My grandmother was visiting from Haiti. My uncle, my aunts, everyone all lay down on the floor, right? And they start searching the house, looking for the just searching the house. And next thing you know, they run out with the shoebox full of money. Mm. So by the grace of God, none of us were physically harmed by that situation. But I found out there's a shoebox full of money because my dad, he used to keep a lot of money in a shoebox. And one of the reasons why is he didn't want to pay taxes. Mm. And because of that, he ultimately ended up getting arrested for tax evasion.
Yeah.
Got arrested, got kicked out the country, and I pretty much lost all communication with my dad since then. Mm. And he recently actually just passed away too.
Wow.
But it taught me a really valuable lesson. I said, hey, I realized that people wouldn't do anything for money, right? And one thing that taught me is like, hey, whenever I figure out this money thing, this wealth thing, I want to make sure I do so legally and ethically and also help other people do the same. So that's really one of my big drivers, remembering that experience and just really educating our people, finding out and showing them all the different ways they could, like, legally and ethically save money on taxes. So that's huge for me.
Wow. Wow. Well, first and foremost, condolences on the passing of your father.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I'm sure that's never easy. Moreover, to hear such a, to call it what it is, a traumatic story, right? To see the person you love the most with their life literally being on the line over money.
Yeah.
Right. It's not something that's easily digestible. I want to kind of dive a little bit more into that time in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I said at the top of the episode, I'm from Haitian descent. You're from Haitian descent. You know, our culture is very interesting because the conversation around money and finance really isn't a deep one.
Yeah.
It's always save your money in case of emergency and make sure you have a dollar or two on you to put in a collection plate at church this Sunday.
Yeah, right? Pretty
much. That's pretty much it. Was that the reality for you as well growing up? Like, what was there any conversation at all about understanding financial literacy and credit and tax and all these different things in your house? Or was that never discussed at all?
No, that wasn't a thing at all. So my financial literacy growing up was, Michelle, go to school, get good grades, praise God, you know, and that's pretty much it, right? And it wasn't really much of a conversation about money, about abundance. It was more so on the, I would say, scarcity mindset of money. Mm-hmm. So making sure you saved money, not talking about investing money, making sure you don't put anything on a credit card, anything like that. It was almost like a survival type of mindset when it came to money. So for me, it really set me back. And, you know, when I went to school, you know, my mom pushed me to go to school. I ended up going to the University of Florida, which is considered one of the top universities in the country as it relates to accounting. And I began learning some financial principles. But then when I graduated, I realized I didn't really know much about financial literacy still. You know, even going to, I thought that going into accounting and getting into finance was going to really teach me. And it taught me some things, but it didn't really teach me how to be able to understand how people are building wealth in real life, which is, you know, pushed me to be able to do like a lot of self-education, self-learning. But yeah, growing up, I didn't have that type of education.
What do you think had a more profound effect on you? Kind of the reality check of leaving school and realizing like, hey, I went to this prestigious university and I still feel like there's gaps that I'm not able to connect, or that traumatic experience when you were younger, seeing, once again, your mom almost lose her life as a byproduct of, you know, your dad just trying to duck and dodge from taxes.
Yeah, I would say it's a combination of both. So that traumatic experience really planted that seed of like, hey, I don't want my family to go through that kind of experience ever when I grow up. And then also making sure that the people that I come in contact with could be able to understand how to find other ways to be able to make money. But then also for me, when I graduated, had this experience, I was actually volunteering. I used to do a lot of volunteer work back then. I volunteered for this organization called VITA. So you're able to help people prepare their taxes for free. Typically lower income individuals, people making less than 50,000. I'm working with this couple, I'm going through the taxes. and they ended up owing some money on taxes that year. And we go through it, and the husband turns to me. He's like, well, how can we save money on taxes next year? And I froze. Like, I didn't know what to tell him, like, because I didn't understand. I didn't understand how to proactively help people mm-hmm. save money on taxes. So for me, I was just like, yo, if I don't know this, and I'm like on track to, you know, become a CPA and working on one of the top accounting firms in the world and still don't understand this, I can only imagine what 99% of the population's understanding is when it comes to this tax thing. So it really inspired me to go down that path and really like take a deeper dive and really figure out, once I got the information, how to simplify it for people who may not necessarily have access to that information, because the information's been out around for centuries, mm-hmm. right? But just certain communities, groups, people of color, right? We didn't necessarily have that information growing up, and no one's really taking the time to put it in a way that we could understand it. So that's one of the one that I would say probably more of the bigger driving factor for me.
Mm. And that's actually also connects to, that was part of something you and I talked about off camera, because, you know, like you said, you're at this time you were a CPA, like you're saying, right?
Yeah.
And you and I kind of joked about it off camera, but it's like, you have a lot of individuals who are professionals in the space like you.
Yeah.
Who are, in the eyes of someone who doesn't know, like, oh, you're supposed to be the almighty and all-knowing person when it comes to taxes.
Right.
Little do I know, me and you ain't that far off in terms of our understanding of taxes, but mm-hmm. you went the extra mile to self-educate yourself. What did that process look like for you to kind of connect the gap between the information you didn't have to the information you know you needed to now come back and help your people?
Yeah. So I started pretty much where I was. So I just started reading books. Mm-hmm. And one of the books I came across was Rich Dad Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. Phenomenal book. Really shifted. It helped me. I felt like was the foundation, helped me understand entrepreneurship, business, investing, real estate. And it taught me a lot of key principles. One of the key principles in that book, he talks about the cash flow quadrant. Talks mm-hmm. about the four ways you can produce income. You can make money as an employee. You can make money as a self-employed individual. You can make money as a business owner. You can make money as an investor. What's really interesting about when he breaks it down, I never thought about it like this, but there's four quadrants. The employee, self-employed, they're on the left side of that quadrant, if you imagine the quadrant. And he says that they have, the employee works at a job, J-O-B, he calls that just over broke in the book. The self-employed individual, they've created a job for themselves, but they're pretty much their own leverage, meaning that in order for them to make money, they have to trade time to be able to make money. And because of that, their income potential and wealth generation is limited. So the people on the left side of the quadrant, even though they make up 95% of the population, they only had 5% of the wealth. Mm-hmm. The people on the right side, the business owner and investor, they have 95% of the wealth, even though they make up the minority. And the reason why is the business owner, they use people and systems to make money. Investors use money to be able to make more money. And I thought that was really interesting. What's even more interesting is that the people on the right side also had more opportunity to save money on taxes. So the tax code favors business owners and entrepreneurs. And once I read that, that really clicked for me. I was like, okay, I need to learn more about how to be able to get on the right side, but then also understand why that is. People ask me all the time, like, Michel, why is it that the tax code favors business owners and investors? And it's because, you know, government is pretty much, they realize the tax system is an incentive system. They know that when they put taxes on things, remove taxes on things, it's going to change behavior and what people do. No one wants to pay taxes. Everyone hates taxes. People want to save money on taxes. So they know that. And because of that, they use it as a leverage to be able to get people to do things. So as business owners, they understand that if you're a business owner, for every person that you hire, that's one less person that has to be unemployed. They have to pay unemployment for. As an investor, for every dollar that you put into the businesses, that's one less dollar that they have to put into business. If you're investing in real estate, that's one less person that they have to put in public housing, all these different things. So they're using it as a way to get people to do what they want them to do. And because of that, you know, it really opens up the door to save money on taxes. And it's crazy because if you look at the tax code, if you were to print out the tax code, it's actually over 75,000 pages, right? And now with these new bills and all the things that they're adding, it's probably over 100 at this point, right? But 75,000, just imagine 75,000 pages in the tax code. What a lot of people don't realize is that less than 5% of the tax code is telling you how to pay tax. Say that to the camera. Less than 5% of the tax code is telling you what and how to pay taxes on. 95% of the tax code is telling you how to be able to legally and ethically save money on taxes. So there's no reason to finesse and do all the crazy things that all these people are getting caught up and getting in trouble for to save money on taxes, right? There's so many different opportunities, and it's just about knowing the information. People think that, you know, tax code is broken. You know, there's a saying that people think that, oh, there's tax code, there's one for the poor and one for the rich. There's one for the poor, one for the wealthy. And I do believe there's two different tax systems, but I don't see it that way. It's not one for the poor, one for the rich, because you don't have to be wealthy in order to save money on taxes. It really comes down to there's one for the ignorant and one for the informed. So if you could be informed about the tax code, then that's how you're able to save money on taxes. When I say ignorant, I don't mean that in a rude or condescending way. The definition of ignorance is a lack of knowledge, a lack of information. So if you get information, that could change your situation, and that's how you're able to proactively save money on taxes. So
powerful.
Yes,
powerful.
Sir.
Powerful. Listening to you break that down and talking about how it seemed like what the stepping stone for you in really understanding wealth and understanding taxes. And like I said in the intro, a lot of the things that the wealthy have known for decades, but our people are kind of playing catch up on.
Yeah.
Started with that book. I know for me, when I started, my expertise is within credit and funding.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started getting the information, I felt so excited to go back to my people and be like, hey guys, look.
You know,
this is how you leverage your credit. This is how you fix your credit, how you get funding.
Uh-huh.
To where it was like, it was like a 50-50 thing every single time, because I would get a percentage of people that's like, oh my goodness, this is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But a much larger percentage of people that's like,
yeah.
Why?
Right.
Bro, get out my face. I ain't trying to hear this right now. Did you have, because you were in a situation where your father got deported, right?
Yeah.
I'm assuming for you, the motivation is that much higher, because it's like, man, I lost my dad. I'm here with my mom and, you know, whatever other family I have. This information is going to completely change the tide for us. Was there an experience where you had to, where you try to go back and kind of help your family connect the dots? And if so, were you greeted with, okay, this is amazing, we're going to start, you know, taking action, or was it something else?
Yeah, it was a mix of both. I know from my mom, actually, she was still, you know, going back to our culture, at least in my family, they're very much about being private, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, you know, because I was kind of felt the same way you did, I was really excited to share this information with people. So I became very public with it and started putting out videos and content, even sharing my backstory with my dad, right? And for my mom, you know, she hated that, but I was really passionate about letting other people know how to be able to do that. So when I shared it, it was not met with open arms. You know, I have a sister who's been a little bit more receptive to it and kind of, you know, implementing some strategies, and she's actually working in my business as well now too, which is a blessing. But yeah, it wasn't necessarily met with open arms. More so, I think, not the information, but more so because of me now becoming like more of a public figure with this information. And then when I started, you know, I've been in business for over almost 10 years now. And when I started, and there wasn't a lot of people, especially people that look like us, that was putting out that information, right? I didn't have anyone to model or anyone to see, okay, what's working for them? How are they communicating it? You know, I had to really hit my head a lot of times and kind of figure out a path to be able to educate people as it relates to how to be able to proactively save money on taxes in our community, right? Because it's a different kind of way to communicate it, right? Our people are, you know, they want to hear the information broken down differently, right? And being able to find ways to be able to create those pictures for them. That's what something I got really passionate about doing. So, yeah.
So at this point, you're getting an education. You talked about, you know, you're working at a big four accounting firm.
Yeah.
I think for most people in that situation, that's like the pinnacle. And they're like, all right, I'm going to just ride it out from now to the end of time.
Exactly.
But for you, as you're getting that self-education, you decide to dive into the world of entrepreneurship. Why was that?
Yeah. So in the back of my head, I knew I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. And going to that prestigious firm, one of the things that I wanted to do was, the great thing about working at that company, and it's like I interned at one of them, started working full-time at another one, and they pretty much do all accounting, tax work for all the Fortune 500 companies. Like 99% of the Fortune 500 companies have some kind of business relationship with these firms. So I'm seeing at the highest level, you know, how these companies are operating. I'm being able to work kind of even kind of shadow and be part and involved in all these different projects. So it's really like a fast path. You know, they say when you spend 2 years at those companies, it's almost like getting like 10 years of experience because it's really intense. You're working a lot of hours. But for me, you know, I knew I was wanting to get into entrepreneurship, but I didn't really have a clear path as to how to be able to do that successfully. And so for me, I just, again, continued to invest in mentorships and masterminds. And what was so crazy is I became addicted to it because I invested in one mentorship and I learned more. I think it was a $2,000 course. I learned more in that $2,000 course than what I learned when I spent like $50,000, took all the student loan debt. I learned more in that program than I did when I went to school. And I was like, hold on. It kind of felt like, I'm a fan of The Matrix. It kind of felt like, you know, when Neo gets connected to all these different things, that he's able to like literally like have all the information downloaded. That's what it felt like to me. So I got really fascinated and really got excited about investing into mentorships and masterminds and programs. And it was like the cheat code. Cause I was just like, I actually get to, like, I'm not learning from someone who's teaching me information from a textbook or someone who just has to be there and waiting to get tenured. I'm learning from people who've actually been able to do, this is what I'm doing today. This is what's working for me. And that's what really got me, you know, gave me the confidence to jump on an entrepreneurship. And then, you know, from there, kind of continue to build from there.
You talked earlier about the cash flow quadrant,
yep,
where it's employee, self-employed, if I'm not mistaken,
yep,
entrepreneur and investor.
Yes.
And you talked about how 95% of the tax code, over 75,000 plus pages, is particularly about how to spend less on taxes, how to save on taxes, ethically and legally. If
that's
the IRS
right.
is watching this, ethically right. and legally. I want to dive and unpack that a little bit because I know within that we have something that is called a write-off, which a lot of people hear, but I'm not really sure many people understand. And I think that's one of the big gaps that exists in our community.
For sure.
What exactly is a tax write-off and how does it work for us as business owners?
Yes. So a tax write-off is essentially going to be a reduction in your taxable income. So I'm going to get kind of technical here. So let's say you make $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now your taxable income, what they're going to tax you on, what they're going to say, like the IRS is figuring out, okay, what number are we going to look at to figure out what tax bracket to put you in? So you make $1,000, your taxable income is $1,000. Now you're going to get hit with a tax rate. And typically, I mean, the tax grade is, not to go too much in detail, it's progressive. So it's like you got a 12%, 24, 32, 37. But just to keep it simple, let's say 30%, that includes your state and federal, right? So 1,000, 30% of 1,000, that's 300, right? That's how much money you have to pay in taxes. Now, if you have a deduction, on the other hand, or a tax write-off, right, when you spend something that the government is saying is allowable deduction, it's going to reduce your taxable income. So unless you go from $1,000, you spend $300 on something that's going to be considered a tax write-off. Now your taxable income is $700. So now you're looking at that $700. So 700 times 30%. Now you're looking at $210 in taxes, right? So you just save $90 when it comes to that write-off. So that's one thing I do want to clarify, because when people hear write-offs, they think it's a dollar for dollar. So basically the way it works, a way to look at it is, in order for you to save 30 cents, you have to spend a dollar, right? That's one way to look at it. So it's not like if you spend a dollar, you're going to be able to get a dollar back from the government. It doesn't work like that. That's more so for a credit. A credit is going to give you like a dollar for dollar back if it's a refundable credit for you, or actually a reduction in what you owe in taxes. But that's essentially what a tax write-off is. And then when it comes to tax write-offs, there's actually still tax write-offs for people who don't have a business or who are not an investor yet. So as it relates to the deductions, right, on if you're just a W-2 employee, right, you could be able to, you have what's called the standard deduction. That's going to be the deduction that they give you automatically just for filing your taxes in America. If you're single, right now for this year, they're bringing that up to $15,000. So you automatically get a $15,000 deduction. You also have what's called an itemized deduction. Those are harder to be able to take advantage of now because they've increased the standard deduction amount. So that's going to be on the personal side. You can also put money into retirement on the personal side. There's different things that you can do that allows you to be able to tax write off. But when it comes to being a business owner, that's when, as far as deductions are concerned, it's pretty much infinite. It's whatever makes sense there. And there's four requirements for you to be able to write off things for your business. And it's based on Section 162A of the tax code. To keep it simple, I've actually created an acronym for people to understand. I call it tax-free. So I say tax-free is the way to be. And what the way it works is it's going to be the four requirements. So the first part of that is going to be F. So F-R-E-E. So F is going to be for your business. So it needs to be for your trade, business, or profession, meaning that if you're spending money, then it needs to be related to that specific type of business. You have to be a business owner, essentially. The next part of that is going to be R, regular. The IRS calls that ordinary. So what's going to be ordinary for your business is going to depend on the type of business that you have. So one of my good friends, she owns her ice cream shop, so she could write off napkins, spoons, refrigerators, freezers, right? As a CPA, it don't make sense, right? You gotta make it make sense, right? So it has to make sense for the type of business that you're in. Regular, ordinary. The next part of that is E. IRS calls that necessary. What's necessary in order for you to operate your business? So that's going to be investing into things probably like utilities and education and professional services like CPAs, attorneys. All these things are essential in order for you to grow and scale your business. And then last but not least, economical. The IRS calls that not lavish or extravagant under the circumstances. So depending on how much money you're bringing in, it's going to impact how you're able to write things off. So for instance, one thing is like 50 Cent, right? Back in 2020, you used to be able to write off 100% of your vehicle. So back in 2020, 50 Cent had this big tax bill. We all know 50 Cent, multimillionaire. What he did was he wrote off 5G wagons, right? About 5G wagons that year, burned them off at the end of the year, was able to get a tax write-off and basically get his tax bill to zero that year, right? Lil Wayne did the same thing. Grant Cardone, big real estate investor, billionaire, he wrote off a private jet in that year. Right. He was able to write off 100% of that private jet because he used it for business purposes. But for most people, right, you might not be able to write off 6G wagons or a private jet yet, but you could write off your personal vehicle or not your personal vehicle, but your a vehicle, and you're able to write off business travel as well. But you have to understand those rules, and those are pretty much the four requirements that you want to look at to help you determine, right? They're not going to necessarily tell you what you can write off. You just want to make sure it's within those guidelines. And then there's past court cases that you could look at that help shape what is actually allowable and what's not allowable, right? Because a lot of times people start throwing other things there, like a haircut, clothes, all these different things. And based on past court cases, they've usually thrown those things out. So you got to be working with the right person or at least get the information.
I want to touch on, and that was really, really good, but thank I you. Want to touch on one of them that you mentioned, because I think it's the most common for anyone who's a business owner, which is the car.
Yeah.
It's the most common, and also, for whatever reason, one of the more popular topics that we see on social, especially when you talk about G-Wagons.
For sure.
Of, you know, writing off 100% yeah. and all these other different things.
Uh-huh.
What is the actual nuance that goes into putting a car in our business name and using it to decrease our tax bill? Can you walk us through that?
Yeah. So there's a couple ways you can do it. So you do have flexibility as to how you could be able to do it. So probably the more popular way, or the way that you probably hear a lot about on social media, is using Section 179 and bonus depreciation to do that, right? So back in 2020, when Trump was first in office, back in 2017, actually, he got it to where you're able to write off 100% of vehicles that weigh over 6,000 pounds, right? And this was the history with that, going back to incentives, is this actually came in place with George W. Bush because he wanted to push people to spend money on gas and so he could profit off of oil, right? And the same thing's happening today, which we'll talk more about. So with that, you have the actual method, you have the standard method, all right? So the actual method allows you to write off the actual expenses as it relates to that vehicle. So there's different ways you could do it. One way, I'll break down in different ways. So one way is if you lease it. Okay, so if you're leasing a vehicle for your business, then you're able to go ahead and write off for business purposes. Now, the best practice is, yes, to go ahead and go to a dealership, put in your LLC, make sure it's under your business name, it's operating under your business to help you have the right documentation. It's not a make or break type of situation, but that's the best practice. So if you're leasing the vehicle, One of the things you're able to do is you're actually able to write off the lease payments based on the business use. So that vehicle needs to be used more than 50% for business. And then let's say you have a lease for $2,000 per month, right? If you're using it for 50% business, now you're able to write off $1,000 every month on that lease. That's probably the simplest way to do it. That's why you see a lot of business owners, they lease their vehicles, one, because it helps their cash flow, but two, it's a simple way to be able to write it off. Another way to do a more complicated way to do it is when you're writing it off based on the percentages that they allow you for the year, right? So it used to be 100%, then every year they keep reducing it down to 20%. So right now we're at 40% with the new tax bill that's being put in place. They were looking to bring that up back to 100% possibly. But right now, let's say you have a vehicle, for instance, if it weighs 6,000 pounds, over 6,000 pounds, then you're able to do this 40% off based on the purchase price of that vehicle, right? So even if you do a down payment of less than 40%, you're still able to do that because it's in your business, it's considered an asset and all assets depreciate. So now you're able to take what's called depreciation, which is probably one of the best deductions because it's not based on how much cash you spend, it's based on the price and the value of that asset. Same thing applies in real estate too. We'll talk more about that. So that is one way to do it. A more simple, more practical way for a lot of people, especially if you're just starting off in business, is to do what's called the mileage method. So the mileage method allows you to be able to write off for every business mile that you drive. So if you're going to a conference, if you're going to a seminar, if you are in real estate, you're going to Home Depot, picking up supplies and doing all these different things, then or having a business meal with someone, then you're going to be able to write off that business mile. So for every mile that you drive, that's 70 cents per mile. So let's say you do 10,000 miles during the year for business, that's $7,000 deduction. Let's say your tax rate is 30%. Now we're looking at $2,100 that you're able to save in taxes. So that's the standard mileage method. Going back to the actual method though, if in addition to being able to write off that the vehicle is over 6,000, under 6,000, they basically have a depreciation table that you can utilize. The first year you're able to do about like 20,000 and it continues to decrease each year as you have that vehicle until it completely writes it off. But you're also able to write off the gas. You're able to write off the maintenance on that vehicle. You're able to write off all the oil changes and car washes, all these different things as it relates to that vehicle based on the business use. So that is the way to do it. So there's different ways you can do it. It just really depends on your situation, how much money you're making, and like obviously sitting down with someone to really do run the numbers for you. But that's the way to do it.
Powerful, powerful. Another one I wanted to touch on, especially for business owners, is travel. Because depending on the kind of business that you have, that could be, you traveled here, right? You got a flight to come here. Now, this one is interesting because, I know if I'm booking a flight to go to a business conference, that chances are I'm probably going to be able to write that flight off because I needed to pay money to get to this thing that I'm going to use to help my business.
For sure.
But you do have, especially because we're in this day and age of social media, you now have, I guess, certain aspiring entrepreneurs that may think to themselves like, all right, I'm really going on vacation to Bali for a week, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But, I'm a dress it up nice to make it look like I'm really going out there to grow my business. And then that way I get this, I can use this to write off my taxes. What is the actual approach or what is the process when it comes to properly leveraging travel to decrease our tax bill?
Yes. So the way it works is this. So going back to those four requirements that I talked about before, the big thing here, and it needs to be for a legitimate business purpose. So going back to even defining business, because I do want to share this because a lot of people miss this. When people hear business, the IRS does not require you to have an LLC, EIN, all these different things in order to be considered a business, right? People think Walmart, Facebook, all these different big companies. The IRS definition is that if you're in the pursuit of profit, so that's the goal. If your intention and your objective is to be able to try to make money, you are considered a business owner. So a lot of people end up not putting their business on their tax return and they end up losing a whole bunch of money because what ends up happening is that, yes, that you didn't make money that year, but you spent all this money on the business. It's going to show as a loss. That loss could actually be applied to your W-2 income, your other income, and reduce your taxable income because it's going to be almost like a deduction now. and you possibly could get a refund or be able to reduce your taxes. So that's one thing I forgot to mention, because a lot of people don't put their business on their tax return, and every time they tell me, I'm like, why? No.
Right. It drives you crazy.
Yeah, because no one tells them. Or even if, and going, not even get, we could talk more about the different people in the tax profession, but the person that they're working with is not telling them not to put it on there because they don't know what they're doing. But going back to business travel, so as relates to business travel, legitimate business purpose, going to a conference, going to a seminar, if you are a real estate investor, you're looking at property, all those different things are going to be considered legitimate business purposes. So what you want to do, now that you know some of the, and there's other ones as well, right? We going on a podcast, right? All these different things, right? There's all these different ways we could do it. But what you want to make sure that you do is that when you're doing it, it's for business. So let's say one way to do it, typically you want to work a business day, which is typically like 4 hours. But let's say, for instance, one way, let's say someone wants to be able to, they have a vacation or they want to be able to relax or do something, right? Let's say, for instance, I like to tell people, let's say you want to go to Disney World, right? For the weekend, or maybe you want to go to Vegas, right? What happens in Vegas stays Vegas, right? We listen, we don't judge, all right? but let's say you wanted to do that. One thing I'll tell you to do is do something business related on that Friday, all right? So if you're going to go to do what you do on the weekend, but if you do something business related on that Friday, so going to a conference, going to a seminar, you can go on a website like meetup.com. Mm-hmm. You can go on eventbrite.com. There's other things that you could utilize to be able to see what business event is going on, that conference, that seminar. Go there, right? It's going to help you be able to make money in your business. It's going to help you grow and expand your business. I would say go there, shake hands, kiss babies, do all the different things. Do some business and then do something business related on that Monday, maybe another conference, maybe another event, meet someone, a business partner, and actually maybe do a deep dive, maybe have a planning session, a mastermind, whatever the case is. If you do that now, that is can make a significant portion of the trip related for business to where you're able to write off up to 100% of that trip, right? So you just have to be proactive when you're doing that, right? So you want to make sure I like to recommend people put on their calendar. Mm. You actually attend the event, you show evidence, you want to do at least 4 hours of business related activity on that day so it can count as a business day. The travel on that day is actually going to be included on that business, part of that business time that you're spending. And again, it's going to help you be able to grow your business, but then also allow you to be able to do it. So if you happen, just so happen to see Mickey Mouse on the weekend, you know what I'm saying? Then that's just what that's just what it is, right? But and not to say and I'm not saying that you could write off the Disney trip, but what happens is because you had to unfortunately stay there, you unfortunately had to stay in Vegas on the weekend, you mm-hmm. unfortunately had to stay in Orlando for the weekend, well, you unfortunately had to get a hotel, mm-hmm. so that hotel now is going to be a tax write-off. The Ubers, the Lyfts, the food that you get is going to be a tax write-off because you have a legitimate business purpose. So again, legit is the whole thing. So you want to just really about being proactive, right? And mm-hmm. another thing too. Like once you understand the tax code, if you want to change your tax, you need to change the facts, mm-hmm. right? The tax code is literally just law. So if you want to change the facts to your favor, you need to understand the rules of the tax code, right? So for instance, one thing I do is my birthday is in October. Every year it's in October, it's gonna happen anyways. And you know, fortunately I'm in a position where I have a lot of the things that if I want something, I'll just buy it, right? But what I decided to do was I host a mastermind that weekend around my birthday, right? So now that turns into a tax write-off. Not because it's my birthday, but because I'm actually hosting a legitimate business event. It's open to the public, I invite my mentees there, we network, we get information, I bring in a whole bunch of guest speakers and all that kind of stuff. So literally turning my birthday into a tax write-off because, again, I'm doing legitimate business purpose work and it just happens to be a birthday, right? So same thing with the travel. It just happens to be that you're going to go to Disney World. It just happens to be that you might be in Vegas, right? And may do something on the weekend until your next business meeting. So it's just about being proactive and just understanding, being a little bit creative as it relates to the tax code.
Mm.
This is good. This is really, really good.
Hey, business owners. Imagine being able to walk in and out of banks and starting to see approvals instead of rejections. And it's not because you changed anything with your business, but because you put your personal credit report in the position it needed to be in. Here at Takeoff Financial, our team helps business owners just like you using consumer law strategies that'll get real results in real time. We remove collections, charge-offs, late payments, evictions, delinquent student loans, along with anything else that's keeping you from getting to your funding goals. And best of all, it's completely done for you. We send the disputes, file the complaints, and do everything needed to help put you in position to access your first $50,000 to $100,000 in business credit. So if you're interested, head over to takeofffinancial.com or click the link in the description below to book a free consultation with me and my team to learn more about how we can help you get one step closer to your funding goals.
Appreciate so it. Another one that I've heard about, and I want to know if there's truth to this, that as a business owner, you could hire your kid and then pay them a salary every year tax-free. Is that an actual thing that we can do?
It's totally different. It's totally a thing. So it's actually considered like a legal loophole, right? Okay. So what that allows you to do, the way it works is, yes, if you're a business owner, you can pay your kids through the business. All right, now the IRS doesn't explicitly say what the age is. All right, so you want to give them earned income, meaning that they're earning, that means that they actively have to do something to be able to earn that income. So typically, based on past court cases, 7 seems to be the age that they deem reasonable. Anything younger than that, you're kind of in that gray area. If you could really legitimately explain, people say they make their kids models and all that kind of stuff.
God bless Mazel tov.
Yeah, y'all got that. But I want to go based on court cases and say that 7 and older is going to be a safe space. It's going to be between the age of 7 and under the age of 18. Mm. And you could pay them up to the standard deduction for that year. So if the standard deduction in the year is $15,000, you could pay them up to $15,000. Do I think you could pay a 7-year-old $15,000? You might love them, but I don't know. You know what I'm saying? It may not make sense for what they're able to do at that age. Not to say you can't do it, mm-hmm. but again, you want to make sure that you have a job description for them. They're doing a real job for your business. Maybe it's helping you with marketing. Maybe they're your clipper. They're editing videos for you. Maybe they're helping you with other things. And you pay them. You could pay them through the business. All right. So one thing is, You can't do it necessarily through an S corporation, because the S corporation is going to require you to now put them on payroll, and then you have to pay payroll tax. But if you're just an LLC sole proprietorship, you're able to do that, and you can go ahead and pay them, you know, up to the amount. So you want to make sure you're tracking the time. You want to make sure that you have a job description for them, and you're paying them through they have to have a separate account too. That's another thing, right? So you can't just give them cash, or you can't just cash out them. They need to have their own separate account, kitty account, that you can go ahead and open, mm-hmm. where you're able to show the paper trail from going from your business bank account to their account.
Yeah.
And it's separate.
What is the, because you talked about how thorough the tax code is to date, what is the craziest strategy that you've seen someone leverage the tax code for, whether it was to pretty much to just save money on taxes overall?
Yeah, the craziest one, off the top of my mind, people hate when I bring up this name, but it is what it is. Trump. Okay, I said
that. Break it down.
I said the T word. Oh my goodness. Oh my God. Don't cancel me. Okay, so Trump, one of the things that he did, obviously, he's, however you feel about him, his team knows a lot about taxes, right? Mm-hmm. And his ex-wife passed away. One of the things that he did was he buried his ex-wife on one of his golf courses. Why'd he do that? What the hell, why would he do that? Mm-hmm. Well, now that golf course becomes a cemetery.
Okay.
For tax purposes, or for tax reporting purposes. And now there's no property tax on it. There's no sales tax. There's no income tax. Because this woman, and I think it's even unique to Jersey too. So it's about the location. So he did it at this location, and now that's a tax write-off. And however you feel about it, like, some, maybe that's a little bit not everyone's appetite, but, you know, it is what it is, right? So, but that's probably one of the more crazy ones I've heard, that that's what he did. And it's a loophole, right? Because it's looking at different components of the tax code. Now, granted, that's not what it was designed for. That's why it's considered a loophole. It wasn't designed for that. But if they didn't close the loophole, if they didn't say you can't do it, then
whoever is on his team that suggested that strategy,
that goal. Yeah, no, they're getting a raise. They're getting a bonus.
Insane. So he had a goal, of course. His ex-wife passed.
Yeah.
Was this recent? This was, had to be, I couldn't remember.
A couple of years ago.
And he buried her on the golf course. So now there's pretty much, there's no taxation on the property, nothing of that sort.
Pretty much.
Absolutely nuts. And you said the word, obviously this isn't a political show, right?
Yeah.
But we know who's in, at the time of the recording of this episode, we know who's currently the commander-in-chief head in the office, which is President Donald Trump. I don't know too much about politics. I'm still getting my feet wet in that space, but I know that recently there was, I think, some like legislation passed called, like he calls it, the Big Beautiful Bill.
The Big Beautiful Bill.
The Big Beautiful Bill. Yeah. Right. It's gonna be incredible. Right. He has a bill.
Yeah.
Is there any tie to that bill with, I guess, some change that may be going on right now in tax code that we as business owners should be mindful of?
Yeah, for sure. So, a couple things that's gonna happen. So, one of the things is when he first got into office, he created the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. This is probably one of the biggest tax reforms probably in our lifetime. The past 30 years, it was huge, right? He did a whole bunch of things. He decreased the tax rates, the tax brackets. He made corporate tax a flat 21% tax rate. He was the one who put the 100% bonus depreciation for the vehicles and a whole bunch of other things. He introduced the qualified business income deduction. And a lot of those things were actually going to be phased out this year. But because he was able to get back in office, he basically was able to extend it and make some of those permanent. So some of the big changes or some of the ones that most people are going to be impacted by is standard deductions are going to continue to be higher. So before, when he got into office, he was saying that his goal was to be able to get the tax, basically get the tax return to be the size of a postcard. So you tried to simplify it to make it simpler to get your taxes done. So he increased the standard deduction so people didn't have to go itemize their deduction and get all this documentation and stuff, you know, to be able to record and get their taxes done. So standard deduction is going to be $15,000 for a single person. Married is always going to be double, so it's $30,000. That's one thing. The tax rates are going to continue to be kind of at the rate that they're at right now. So they're going to continue to be lowered. The corporate tax rate is going to stay at the 21%. That was supposed to be phased out. They are looking to still have the qualified business income deduction. Now it's going to be phased out pretty soon. And then now a couple of new things are going to be in there is no federal taxes on tips. So if you're a worker, if you're working somewhere that has tips, up to $25,000 could be deductible for you. You're not going to have to pay taxes on it if you make a certain amount. So if you make less than $150,000, then that's what you're able to do, and it continues to get phased out past that. Going back to incentives, Trump loves his liquid gold, as he calls it, the liquid gold. It's my liquid gold. Tell Elon, he can't touch it. So he's basically getting rid of all, he doesn't believe in any of the Green Act stuff. He doesn't believe in energy, conservation, any of it. He's just like, we're running up this oil. So basically getting rid of a lot of those incentives, the green initiatives that were put in place. So there was things related to solar. There was tax credits for purchasing electric vehicles like the Tesla. That's out of here. A lot of other things related to incentivize people to go more green. He's reversing it and eliminating it to get people to be more using fossil fuel and oil.
Mm-hmm.
Again, doing what he wants people to do. So that's another thing. On a positive note, the child tax credit is going to increase to $2,200. So anyone that qualifies for a child tax credit, that's going to remain to increase. Those are some of the big ones. They're looking to continue. They're looking to bring back, obviously, the bonus depreciation, bring that up to 100%. And some of the other things that he introduced, they're looking to expand and increase those. But those are like the ones that's going to impact the most people as well. But yeah, there's a lot of controversy. And then also with that big, beautiful bill, outside of taxes, they're also looking to There, it also includes things in there that's going to get rid of food stamps, reduce the benefit on the food stamps, the SNAP program, eliminate some things on Medicare and Medicaid. Also, there's going to be increases in spending as it relates to ICE and border control and building walls and all that kind of stuff. So basically, in order to fund this bill, you know, it's probably going to increase the national debt to another, you know, they're estimating like $3 trillion to $5 trillion. Mm. So, you know, now there's a lot of controversy, not even getting into politics, but now there's a lot of controversy with that because Elon, you know, they were besties and now they're kind of
beefing it out.
It's crazy. It's weird, right? Yeah. This is like, I feel like it's not real life right now. But right now, he's going back and forth like, well, hey, because he created Doge, which is supposed to help, you know, reduce elimination and try to save taxpayer money and make it make sense. But now, you know, he's just going like, he's just doing him, right? He's just like, yo, I'm spending it how I want to. And I don't care about the national debt. Like, we're just going to run it up.
So what are some of the different things that as business owners, now that we have context around the bill, that if possible, things we can do to kind of get ahead of it or prepare ourselves as best for it?
Yeah, the biggest thing I would say, honestly, is just to work with someone and working with getting a tax plan, right? And tax planning overall is helping you proactively look at your life, your business, regulatory requirements to help you save money on taxes. So with that, working with a tax strategist, not just anybody, right? Because when it comes to this profession, as Meek Mill says, there's levels to this, right? There's different levels as it relates to different individuals that you can work with. So I want to share that because that's important, because ultimately, and the reason why I'm sharing it this way is because whenever people watch this, this is doesn't matter who's in office, what's going on in the world, this is always going to be a thing, right? So when it comes to the tax profession, right, we have the first level is the tax preparer, okay? When I was helping people with their taxes, I was doing what's called tax prep. Tax preparer, in order to be, the requirement in order to be a tax preparer, you don't have to go to school, you don't have to have a GED, you don't have to have a diploma, right? You just have to typically be 18 years of age. You get a P10, EFIN if you want to. You can be able to do people's taxes. If you want to do people's taxes next year, run it up, right? You can do that. The next level is what I believe is going to be what's called an enrolled agent. And a enrolled agent is someone who took a 3-part exam with the IRS. And I kind of see enrolled agents as like real estate agents, because in order to be a real estate agent, you don't have to go to school to be a real estate agent. You just have to pass an exam, show people that you're knowledgeable about that specific subject matter. Mm-hmm. That's an enrolled agent. The next level is a CPA. So I'm a CPA, certified public accountant. In order to be a CPA, listen to this, right? In order to be a CPA, you have to go to school. You have to have a bachelor's, which is 4 years. You have to have a master's, which is 2 years. You have to work under a CPA for 2 years. And you have to pass a 4-part exam that has a less than 50% passing rate. Mm. It's a high bar, right? And you got all these ethics and all these different things that you got to keep in mind. And I'm telling you, even as a CPA, and even though I love being a CPA and I love the profession, I have respect for the profession, I'll tell you, as a CPA, not all CPAs can help you proactively save money on taxes, right? The CPA prepares you to be able to work in corporate America. It gives you a good overview of all things accounting and tax. But in order for you to be able to help people save money on taxes, you actually have to go out like I did and invest and work with the top people in the country to be able to learn these strategies, these things that I'm sharing to help you and your clients be able to save money on taxes. So the highest level, and I had to, a lot of people call it tax strategist, but I call it the tax elite. And the reason why I call it the tax elite is because it's another acronym to help people understand who to work with and who do you need to look for when it comes to helping you save money on taxes, right? So when it comes to elite, it's the first part of that is education. They did go to school for accounting and tax. If they did, that's a sign that they're investing in the career and they are knowledgeable about the profession. Cool. The next thing is L, legal representation. Can they represent you in front of the IRS? So as a CPA, I can represent you in front of the IRS. EAs have the authority as well, tax attorneys. I's integrity. You want to make sure you're working with someone who's doing things legally and ethically. That's huge. There's no reason for you to be able to write off kids you don't have and doing all this finessing that was going, especially during the COVID pandemic time period.
It was running up.
It was going crazy. Yeah. Now they're going to jail. Some people just sitting that they on timeout for a little bit, right? They taking a couple of months and they sitting in timeout right now. God bless them. And then that's IT training. Are you constantly getting trained up on the tax code? That's going to be important. All these different changes. It's always changing. You want to keep up with that. And then last but not least, e-experience. So not just years of experience, right? Because you can have experience in the wrong area of taxes, right? So experience as it relates to helping people proactively save money on taxes, helping business owners, entrepreneurs understand how to save money on taxes. That's going to be really key. And those are going to be the main areas. And in your specific niche, too, because you got real estate, which we could talk more about. That's a whole different niche and whole different strategies there. You have all these different industries. So you want to work with someone who has experience in your industry. But all these tax elite, we all do tax planning, which is helping you proactively save money on taxes. Right. So basically, let's say it's an investment with a high ROI. Tax prep is just a cost to you. But like, let's say you could help someone save $100,000 on taxes, right? If you invest, like, do you think, like, basically the math is this, right? If you give me a dollar and I give you $10, is that a good deal?
If you give me a dollar
and I turn around to give you $10, is that a good deal? Yeah. That's exactly what it is, right? And we can keep playing that game back and forth. So if someone invests $10,000 to get a tax plan, you're able to help them save $100,000. That's basically the ROI. Tax prep doesn't really do that for you, right? Sometimes people try to do with a tax refund, but I'll say this, talking a little bit on my soapbox about tax refunds. Tax refunds is not something to celebrate. It's not something to celebrate. Like, people get like, I remember I used to get so excited because I used to work a whole bunch of jobs. I used to work at Burger King, McDonald's. I used to push carts in Target. Like, I did a whole bunch of jobs, right? And I used to get excited about tax refunds until I understood that a tax refund is not, it's not a benefit. That just means I overpaid. I basically gave the government an interest-free loan. They're able to do whatever they want to do with the money. And then they just gave me back my little money at the end of the year. It's like, here you go, boy, good job. Thank you. Appreciate you. Right? Didn't get any extra money for it. So it's not a benefit, right? It's an interest-free loan you gave to the government. Congratulations. You played yourself. So your goal should be like to at least get even, break even, or at least, you know, not have too much of a, you know, difference between what you, so being proactive throughout the year. So yeah.
One of the other things I wanted to touch on as well, because when we talk about business and more specifically business structure, there's different types of structures that go into just our how we navigate the tax space.
For sure.
Right? We have LLCs. Then you also have, I know the main ones, I don't want to get too nitty gritty. You have LLCs and you have S-Corps. I know that's the big ones that most people watching the show know about.
Yeah.
How do taxes differ for people who own? Because I think everybody under the sun thinks, oh, I'm just going to go out and get an LLC. But depending on where you are right now in your business, it probably would make more sense for you to go the route of a different business structure that'll be more fit for you. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah. This is actually something that's really important that people in the tax industry don't understand.
Mm.
That's how bad it is. All right. So, and it took me, and I didn't learn this until I got out of school to learn this. So we have entities, but when it comes to entities, there's really two main categories. We have legal entities and we have tax entities. Legal entities is how you're going to be structured with your state. Tax entities, how you're going to be taxed at the federal level. So let me break it down. So as it relates to legal entities, you have a sole proprietor, you have a partnership, which is more than one person, you have an LLC, limited liability company, and you have a corporation. Those are your legal entities. Those are registered with your state. And the purpose of those is going to impact how you're going to be handled from a legal perspective. So if you're just a sole proprietor, if you're just starting off, like if you're in a pursuit of profit, you're trying to make money, you're automatically, that's the default. You have a business idea, you're trying to make money, you're automatically sole proprietor. When you know you're going to make money, or even before you know you're going to make money, I would recommend, if you're getting in business, you're supposed to be getting in business to make money. So I would recommend you could go out and jump out and get a LLC, limited liability company, because what's going to happen is going to give you that legal protection. What do I mean by that? So if someone tries to come sue your business, it's going to create separation between your personal assets and your business assets, right? So they can only come after the assets in your business bank accounts, which is why important. You need to have a separate business bank account. You should get an EIN, employer identification number. You can get that for free on irs.gov. There's people who charge you for that. You can get it for free. it's free. Free game. Go ahead and get your EIN. That's basically going to be like your social security number for your business. So LLC and corporation, they give you the legal protection. That's going to be at the state level, right? So depending on different states that you're in, there's some different nuances by the state, right? So California, for instance, California, everything's expensive. California, they actually charge like what's called a franchise tax on it. So they charge you extra. Now we have tax entities, right? Getting into a little bit about the S corporation. This is going to be how you're actually taxed. So you could be a sole proprietor, you could be a partnership, you could be an S corporation, or you could be a C corporation, right? So you can be, the cool thing with the LLC on the legal side is, as you could have the LLC taxed as a sole prop, taxed as a partnership, taxed as a S corp, taxed as a C corp, right? So it gives you flexibility. So here's the thing. When you have an LLC taxed as a sole proprietorship, you're going to have to pay what's called self-employment tax. Mm-hmm. When you're working a 9-to-5, you have to pay payroll tax. So you as an employee, you pay 7.65%. Your employer pays 7.65%, right? That's basically covering things like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, all these different things, right? Now, as a sole proprietor, you are the business owner and the employee. Mm. So you're paying 15.3% on that, right? So let's say you make $100,000. In profit, this is going to be on the profit of the business. You make $100,000, you got to pay $15,300 mm-hmm. in taxes. So what do? So one of the ways to save money on taxes is you can go ahead and upgrade to a S corporation. All right. So the S corporation is now going to eliminate that self-employment tax. You still have to pay payroll tax, but you're not paying that on the profit of the business. Mm-hmm. So now what you have to do is give yourself what's called a reasonable salary. So you go ahead, you pay yourself a reasonable salary. Let's say you make it's the same $100,000. Let's say you pay yourself $50,000. Right now, that 15.3 instead of the profit of the business is going to hit the salary that you pay yourself, and that automatically, basically in that scenario, cuts your tax bill in half. Mm. Typically, you want to do that when you're making more than $50,000 in profit. So people say 40, but I'll say 50 is really that's. Is it better sweet spot because it gets more expensive to be able to get an S corporation because you have to do a more expensive tax return. Yeah. It's more maintenance, all that kind of stuff. So usually $50,000 in profit. If you know you're going to do that before the end of the year, or if you're currently doing that right now, you need to do that just by switching that, right? And you can go ahead and work with someone to help you be able to do that. You could do it online. I recommend you work with someone, but you can use a form called 2553 to make that S corp election. And then go ahead. You have to do it within the first 75 days of the year. Typically, it's going to be March 15th. Mm-hmm. If you haven't done it yet, you could work with someone or you could try to look it up yourself. But you could do what's called late S election to switch it over. And then you want to make sure that you're giving yourself a salary, putting yourself on payroll to make sure you're compliant with that.
Money. I love it.
Attention business owners. Are you tired of getting denied for business credit because your personal credit is still holding you back? You have the business, you have the vision, but every single time that you apply, lenders hit you with the same brick wall time after time again, your credit report. You see, here at Take All Financial, we use advanced consumer law strategies to get every negative item removed from your credit report. Things like collections, charge-offs, late payments, delinquent student loans, and so much more. And best of all, it's fully done for you. Our team sends out the dispute letters, files the complaints, and handles everything needed to get your credit to the finish line, which means you don't have to lift a finger, and we'll do all the heavy lifting needed to put you in position to finally get approved for business credit. So if you're ready to stop getting denied and start getting funded, head over to takeofffinancial.com to book a free consultation with me and my team to see how we can put you in position to get one step closer to your funding goals.
There's something else, because we're starting to wind down here, but I can't let you get off this platform without touching on one last thing, because you said this off camera. I'm going to bring it on camera. The 10 tax commandments.
Mm.
What exactly is the 10 tax commandments? Because you kind of touched on it, but you didn't really expand on it. Break that down for me.
Yeah. You know, the 10 tax commandments, it's so funny. So for me, I just love hip hop. You know what I mean? I grew up with hip hop. It kind of was, hate to say it, like, for lack of a better, it was like my father figure, like hip hop. I feel like hip hop raised me, right? So I was really ingrained in the culture of hip hop and wanted to be a rapper for the longest. You know, because for me, there wasn't any Michelles, there wasn't any money making Mitches, all right? As like that, I call myself Money Making Mitch, right? Mm-hmm. There wasn't this online space of entrepreneurs. Like, all we saw was athletes and rappers, right? Yeah. And I'm not gonna lie, I was trash. I sucked at all the sports. Even though people look at me and they're like, I look athletic and I always get picked first, but then when I get on the team, they're like, I can't believe I picked this guy because this guy's trash. Mm-hmm. But hip hop was my thing, right? So I was really a big hip hop fan. Biggie, shout out to Biggie, rest in peace, was a big Biggie fan, and he had the song called The 10 Crack Commandments. And I was like, you know, crack, tax, it rhymes. And then as I started breaking down, and finding the similarities between the crack and the tax, it just all these different concepts started forming place. And when I really got knowledgeable about the tax code, I was able to tap into that, and I created what's called the 10 Tax Commandments. I have a whole music video shot here in Brooklyn as well, so you can check that out. It's on WorldStar and everything. And yes, so the 10 Tax Commandments. So if you're familiar with the song 10 Crack Commandments, it's basically at the flow and the tempo of it, and it goes like this. I've been in the game for years. It made me an animal. Those rules to this code. I wrote me a manual, a step-by-step blueprint for you to get your game off taxes, the feds off your back. Rule number uno, let the IRS know how much dough you hold, because you know evasion breeds penalties, especially if that prep is messed up. Watch your tax go up. Number two, document expenses you could prove. Don't you know them boys treat lying like violence? Take it from your highness. I didn't see mad cats and kids cut for their skins and tricks. Number three, go form an LLC. A lawyer set that up, properly draft up, deed in to stay up, yep, for them big busts, they'll get that paperwork cleaned up, word up. Number four, I know you heard this before, always rely on your CPA guy. Number five, never tax prep where you rest at, I don't care if they do it free, tell them leave. Number six, that tax advance credit, debt it, you think they're doing you a favor, no, forget it. Seven, this rule is so underrated, keep your personal and business completely separate. Business and blood don't mix like politics with no tricks, find your business serious risk. Number eight, know the date your taxes due. If you miss a deadline, they'll be coming for you. Number nine should have been number one to me. If you start a business, stay away from hobbies. If they're thinking it's a hobby, they ain't trying to listen. You'll be stressing in the kitchen when them letters start hitting. Number 10, a strong word, corporation. Strictly for bizmen, not for freshmen. If you ain't got investors, then say hell no, because they ain't going to want their money rain, sleet, hell, snow. Yo, follow these rules. You have mad bread to break up. If not, 24 years on the wake up. Flow, hit your tempo. Watch your friends shake up. Caretaker, did you make up? When you pass, my bad. I hope you rake up. A lot of cash with beachfront in Jamaica with the Michelin star chef to hook a steak up. Gotta go. More returns to make up. A word up, Task King. Ah!
Yeah! This is the first time ever we've ever had somebody rap on here. That was fire.
Appreciate you.
That was
bro.
Very, very dope. And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, I can't follow that up. We gotta close that. Yes, that's sir. The best way to close it out. Appreciate my guy.
You. Yes, sir.
Mr. Val Brunton. Thank you for that.
For sure,
thank you for this interview, and thank you for pulling up, man. I know we got to get you out of here.
Yeah.
Let the people know where they can find you. Let them know what you got going on. Yeah, your camera man. Right here.
You can find me on all social media platforms. Michelle Valbrun, first name, last name. MICHELVALBRUN. So Michelle Valbrun. You'll find me there. Instagram is where I'm most active, but you can find me on YouTube. I'm constantly putting videos on there. And all the social media platforms, make sure you check me out there. And I also do something really special for your audience as well. I'll give them a free gift. So make sure, in order to get that free gift, make sure you guys go ahead, go on to YouTube. It should be in the link description somewhere. And you guys will be blessed by some free game, and just continue. Like, you know, I say information changes situations. And, you know, I love to say generational curses ran in my family until they ran into me. So if you are a generational curse breaker and you know that's who you are and how you're showing up in this world for your family, you want to make sure you get this information, because it really will change generations for you.
It will change generations and it will change situations, but not without implementation. So what I That's need for you fact. To do right here, right now, is implement this. Take a second, take a minute, take an hour out of your day right here, right now, to go ahead, hit that like button, tell a friend to come back and rewatch the episode again. And make sure you click the link in the description as well to check out my guy and all things that he has going on. But as always, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Marvin Francois. That's my guy, Mr. Michelle Valbrun. Y'all have been good. We've been great. This episode has been amazing. And we had a gosh darn rap at the end. Thank you all. And God bless. I'll see you next time. Peace.